Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige Vanderbeck, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and truly modern witchcraft. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. This week, I have a really exciting double feature, meaning two back-to-back episodes. I had the pleasure of interviewing two of the stars of a new documentary about modern witchcraft called Coven. This premiered last month on the CBC here in Canada. I was really lucky to get one-on-one time with both Andra and Laura, and ended up with so much great material that I decided to give them each their own episode. I do hope you will listen to both because they both had really, really good perspectives to share, really unique perspectives, and they were both really well spoken. I had honestly a really good time talking to both of them. So in the film Coven, it follows three witches from Toronto, Andra, Laura, and Leilani, and they are all in the millennial age range. They begin by introducing us to their own individual backgrounds in witchcraft and, you know, in their life, what led them up to this point. And then they talk about the ways that witchcraft connects them either to others or to other versions of themselves. And finally, they each travel outside of the country to explore some of the ancestral ties that they each have to magic. I watched the movie multiple times, not just to prepare for the interviews. I've also watched them since because now I have a little bit more of a connection to two of the people in it. So this is one of the best documentaries about modern witchcraft I've seen, and about the witches themselves. You know, it's not just about like the history of witchcraft. It's a real look at how actual people are practicing witchcraft, how they're weaving it into their life, and how it helps them relate to the world. Every witch in the film is unique. Every tradition and style of practice that they explore is different. The cast is diverse, and the connection with witchcraft, and for some of the people like Laura, queer identity, is really explored in a beautiful way. Two of the stars are also musicians, and their music, which is super magical, it blew my mind. I've been listening to it ever since. It's really fabulous. I'll link to it in the description, of course. This film is super well made. It's interesting all the way through. And in the end, you know, it made me think about my own personal style of magic. It made me feel very empowered. And I'm like, you know, they're all such wonderful, powerful witches, and they're all doing something completely different. I love that I'm also doing something completely different. I think that is what makes modern witchcraft so wonderful, is how different it can be for all of us, that the various things that it can mean to people. So in this episode, I am talking to Laura Hochstad, a tarot reader and a witch who's searching for a way to connect with other people and with herself through witchcraft. So in the film, she visits some local covens and some priestesses, each who have their own ways of bringing other witches together, which you will hear in our interview. And then she leaves Canada to explore some of her actual ancestors, you know, through her DNA ancestry. And her ancestors in the past were part of some of the biggest events in the history of witch trials. Her section of the film is like so wild. Like I had tingles the entire time. I was yelling like, oh my God, is this really happening? What do you mean? So without spoiling too much of it, she travels to Salem, Massachusetts, and then to Scotland. So I think some of you are already, you know, gathering how that went. Now, before we start, I was really hoping to be able to fix this completely so I wouldn't have to bring it up. You know, for a minute I was like, can I just gaslight them all into thinking it sounds normal? But I don't think you would fall for it. I sound really, really awful audio-wise in this interview. I clearly had some issues with my own microphone. I did my best to clean it up in post-production. Fortunately, Laura comes through very clearly. It sounds great. And that's really important because that this episode is all about her. You know, what she says is the most important part. But it can be hard to hear some of the things that I say throughout, and that, you know, takes away some of the context. So what I've done is created a transcript that you can download and follow along with if you need it. Actually, this is the first chance I've had to use my editing program's transcription feature, which is kind of cool. So I'm kind of excited to see if you guys find that helpful. Either way, I'm very, very fortunate to have had a chance to speak with Laura and to share it with all of you. And I really hope you enjoyed the interview.
I think my favorite thing about the documentary was how all three of you in your own way are looking for connection. You know, you're looking to connect with magic, you're looking to connect with other people who have been involved in witchcraft or in magic in general. What is it exactly that drew you to kind of feel like I need to reach out to other people or to the past? I need to see what other people are doing.
I think I was kind of searching for that community for a long time. I talk about in the documentary that I was kind of a solitary practitioner. You know, I would get books and I would just do it on my own. Partly because I grew up in a smaller town where I didn't really know anyone who shared those interests with me. But also, I think there was a bit of imposter syndrome or fear of not being accepted. I was like, am I doing it right? Am I enough? Like, am I, you know, what if I meet another witch and she just reads me and she's like, no, you don't belong here. You know, there's that fear of rejection, I think. So for a long time, it kind of kept me just on my own. I think what happened was when I moved to Toronto, I was like, you know what, there is a wider world out here, and it's something that I've always been interested in, and kind of baby steps forward in my practice. But I think once that I was in a bigger city, and like you said, Toronto has so much to offer in terms of that kind of community, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready now to kind of pull that band-aid off and be a bit more open with it and try and learn without that fear of rejection. I mean, it was still there in the back of my mind, but I think definitely having the documentary as a starting or as a launching point, I think helped kind of get rid of some of those fears that were hanging around.
Absolutely. How did you get involved with the documentary back then?
I had a mutual friend who knew Rama. And she had put me in contact because I guess Rama had talked to her about, you know, maybe looking for somebody who was interested in witchcraft, but maybe didn't have their full practice decided yet, kind of thing, or they're kind of still feeling kind of new or fledgling about it. So my friend Celeste put us in contact. And then when Rama and I met, it was just like we bonded really quickly, and she was just really open to just like letting me explore different ways and meeting different people. So it was kind of it was just very lucky that my friend put us in contact, because otherwise I wouldn't know everything that I know now about my history.
You had such a like you went on such a journey in this movie. Even I was like, you know, the more you uncovered, I looked just like you. Like I had my hands in front of my face, like, oh my God, like
I know,
I cannot
right?
believe this. Like this is so crazy. You
That's
really,
yeah.
like such a crazy journey of discovery. So how do you think you and your practice and your connection with witchcraft has changed? You know, since all of the crazy things you learned in making this movie.
Yeah, I think it's definitely become, how can I feel like before, maybe I felt that the aspects of witchcraft I was embracing, I was still in the back of my own mind judging myself and being like, are you just, you know, doing this? Like, you're not connected to it. You know, I was just like having this really harsh, critical voice in my head of like, I'm not doing it right. Or if anybody who was an actual witch saw me, they would probably think that I don't belong, all these things. But I think because I've been always drawn to it since I was a kid and just wanting to learn more and slowly doing it over the years, I think finding out that I had this familial connection to not one, but two women who were accused of witchcraft just kind of made the pieces feel like they fell into place. Like maybe this is part of my journey, part of my life is to embrace this title of witch and to really lean into this witchcraft for those, just the family that had those words used in a weaponized way against them to take them down. And now it's kind of like, you know what, we're in a time and place where we can explore witchcraft for all that it is and embrace it and be accepted for it. So I don't know, it kind of made me feel like I was supposed to be here and that everything that I had been interested in leading up to now was for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's really hard to question, is this really for me? Am I really supposed to be here when you see all of these signs going back, hundreds of years? Like, yes,
Right.
like this is definitely something that is connected to you. So I have a lot of American listeners that might not be able to watch the movie. So I want to talk a little bit about your specific ancestors. So the first was Mary AC in Salem, Massachusetts, who was the sister of Rebecca Nurse, who I think might be the most like recognizable name from the witch trials in 1692.
Absolutely. Yeah, you see there's a lot
Yeah.
of books published about Rebecca Nurse and things like that,
Huge.
but yeah.
Absolutely huge. And what was really interesting about the two is that, they were some of the most pious and well-respected people in the whole town. So it was a huge shock when they were accused. And Mary specifically was, she's
Yeah,
so
because
interesting.
she
Her,
was in her 50s, right? She was older
yeah.
as well. And then we learned too, following like the trial transcripts and stuff, she was accused and then released and then actually brought back.
Yeah.
So I just can't imagine that, this woman who has this accusation and it's like this hysteria around witchcraft and the trials at the time and this fear, and especially being such like a, like you say, pious woman, and then to be like, okay, I'm released, I'm going home, and then to have that kind of come back again. I feel like when I discovered that I had that connection, and we all know there's that the witch trials across the world were such a tragedy and just so awful, but I think sadly when you can have that name connection, that family connection, it made me feel that the gravity of it even more. Sadly, I think when you can connect your own experience to it, your own life to it, it just,
Yeah.
yeah, I feel like it really made me feel a lot more connected. And that's also what I find so frustrating about the witch trials is that, it wasn't this idea that Hollywood has of this like green-skinned woman in the woods kidnapping children. These women weren't that. They were, pillars in their community. They could have been healers. They could have been immigrant or enslaved women. Like it was just like it was all more about power than
Yeah.
and the people in power than anything that these women were doing. I've seen
Absolutely.
people say as well, if they were midwives or anything like
Oh,
that,
yeah.
could get you a accusation of witchcraft if you were an older woman unmarried or if you were a young woman who was attractive. Like, it's just, anything can be, it seemed at the time anything could be used as as proof of witch, of being a witch.
Absolutely. And I think with Mary and with her sister, the fact that they were such, I mean, they were such good people. Everybody liked them. They were well respected. They, kind to other people. I think that's one of the reasons, the girls who made the accusations, they were teenage girls, right? And teenagers, for how much they've changed over years, also have not changed. And and when you see someone who is very, very good, the teenage instinct to knock them down a peg, I think just is so much stronger. But so
Oh,
good
sorry.
about Mary, I think, is that in the end, with her last words, she not only advocated for like the release of the other wrongfully accused, but also was like, I want you to take a second look at these girls, and forgive them for this because they're lying. But God knows what's going on, and he's going to forgive all of us for this. And I was like, oh my God, like you.
I know to have that level of grace at the end of your life at the that everything she'd been through, yeah, it's just it was yeah, her statement in the court is incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm getting a little choked up. I was reading it this morning, and like I found it in the old Puritan English, right? So it took me a quick minute to get through, but I was. You know, I had tears by the end of it because I was like, Jesus, this is so heavy. It makes it so real, especially with Salem. You know, Salem is it's something that we're very comfortable with sensationalizing a lot in movies, on TV, and in plays. You know, it's one of those things we all know it really happened, but it feels like something that was made up.
Yeah, it feels so far removed from anything that we experience now, or in terms of like, we just can't understand that level of, I guess, like hysteria. Although I hate using that word because that's another word that was used, weaponized against women.
It's got a brutal history, but I think in this context it really is the best word to use because it has that double meaning. You know, it's a word that really only means like a woman going crazy because of her hormones, you know, and that's the level of hatred towards women that really contributed to Salem as well. What was it like to be in Salem, Massachusetts? The only time I've been is in October, so it's a bit of a it's like a theme park bit. When
Oh yeah,
you were
absolutely.
there, it's a little bit more of a serious time in a place. How did it feel to be a modern witch walking around, you know, the city of witchcraft?
Oh, it was incredibly powerful. I just and then I got to meet a few people there as well. Like, there's a woman that runs the Salem Witch Trial Museum in the old church. And then I also met a witch named Sandra, who's an author. She's incredible. And she really helped me kind of connect to the memory of Mary Eastie. She brought me to Proctor's Ledge, and we conducted kind of a little ritual there of me just trying to connect with that, with her memory and her spirit. And I'm just so thankful for her taking the time to do that. It was just like, it was really powerful. I feel like when you're there and you're walking those streets, you can just imagine, you can take yourself back to that time. And that's kind of what I kept doing in my brain. I was like, okay, here we are at Proctor's Ledge. And you just kind of feel what maybe the folks that were there at that time were feeling. And it was very overwhelming and very emotional. And yeah, there's a lot of energy there in Salem. And I found everyone who I met was so welcoming and open and willing to teach me things and talk to me. It was just, yeah, it was really validating and beautiful. And I want to go back all the time. I haven't been in October though. I do feel like it's pretty busy at that time
Different.
of year.
It's absolute pandemonium. Like, there are too many people on those teeny tiny little cobblestone streets. So it's definitely, you know, I'd love to go back at a more, you know, a more serious time of year, but I do like kind of the fun, cheesy Halloween stuff. So, you know, I'm not
Absolutely.
mad about it. I'm not mad about it. It's just, I think it's different. I think it's just a different experience, right? But I found the same thing. I found that people there were really, there was definitely this sensational element, but people were still very serious. They still took it seriously. They still made it very clear that this history is very important.
Yeah, they speak about it with a heaviness and a gravity that, like, I think, like you said, maybe in media and stuff, we don't see that seriousness. It's, you know, movies like Hocus Pocus, which I love, but it's like
Love,
that level of, you know, oh yeah, so they were witches and then the townspeople, you know, killed them. And but when we're talking with folks who live in Salem and have this knowledge of the history, it is treated with, you know, more seriousness, more gravity. And like you said, because we don't want this to happen again, we want to talk about it. So,
yeah. When I was there, I went to the memorial to the witch trials, and there are descendants of those people who still live in Salem, and like there were little handwritten notes on some of the memorial stones, like, we're still here. So it's a very amazing place. It's a very magical place.
Not only like in Salem, but for the dock, we went kind of to like the Salem County, like outside of the main area. And actually, we were all able to find where the property that Mary Eastie had before her death. So I was able to like walk the grounds of where she lived, which was incredibly powerful, and I think I was thankful for that moment, almost not maybe not more than Proctor's Ledge, but because Proctor's Ledge, with everything that happened there, all the pain and death, it was just to be able to be on her property where she lived and had her family, you know, that made me feel really connected too, and I was glad, so glad for the opportunity to have both, but it was
Yeah.
a different kind of connection when it was like, okay, this is, she walked here, she stepped in this area when she was
Yeah.
living her life. So that was
It's really
really felt.
important to remember that those people, I mean, they were people. She was in her 50s. She lived a whole life. You know, her death isn't the only thing that she
About her.
did. You know, that's not the only contribution that she made to the world. So being able to, you know, visit the place where she had her final moments, but then all the moments before that, I think you're right. I think that is very important. And then you had the opportunity to go to Scotland, and again, I was like yelling. I was like, this is so crazy.
I know. I honestly, I feel like, you know, that Always Sunny in Philadelphia meme where he's like connecting all the conspiracy board walls and he's pointing at it. So that's how I felt when I started doing more research. I was like, okay, wait. And then I've got family here. And then we go and we find out all this information. We met an amazingly eccentric man who really took us through this journey of like tracing back my ancestry even further to Crook of Devon. To be able to find my family back to like to trace it back to like the 1500s in that area, and then to find out that we had relatives who were also accused of witchcraft there and faced trial and sentenced to death. It just put the perspective of the witch trials, or not perspective, sorry, it just showed me how far it stretched. I think we talk about the Salem witch trials, and I think that's so important, but in actuality, you know, between 1400 and 1700, these witch trials were taking place all over Europe. And I think I read an article where it's an estimated at least 100,000 people were accused, but I think between 40 and 50,000 were sentenced to death between the 1400 and 1700s, around that anyway. And just, you know, so as much as we know about Salem, it's like these things were happening in so many other places as well. So it just kind of, yeah, it was very hard to process all that, but also at the same time, just so, I was so floored that I had family in Scotland who had faced the same thing.
It's you know, I think you're right. I think with Salem, it's like we think of 1692. You know, this was one bad year in history, but it wasn't just one bad year. It was hundreds and hundreds of bad years, and there are still people living today that are connected to that. You know, those people, even though they died, you know, they left family behind, they left people behind, they left communities behind who are still there.
Absolutely.
Find out, you know, as a modern witch, that you have not one but two ancestors who were executed, you know, for the crime of witchcraft, and two of the worst, like the biggest years for witchcraft in history. That has to be something that is still affecting you. How do you think that your practice specifically might have changed since then?
I think there's a centeredness to my practice now, where maybe before I was just kind of feeling like I was grasping at different things, but I think now that I think I just centered it centered my practice in ancestry, I think. So when I'm connecting to myself or nature, I'm kind of pulling in the memories of those of my family members, because you know it may be neither of them would c call themselves a witch for obvious reasons, that was kind of what condemned them, but I'm trying now very mindfully to have a practice that honors them and like connects, and I just really try and connect myself to them. So I think that really it helped me find a focus for my practice, and really cemented my feelings around it.
I think that's something interesting about being a witch now, is that it means so many different things. You know, there's the actual, you know, the spiritual practice of witchcraft. But you said that you feel like you're also a witch for political and feminist reasons. You know, there's and that is, you know, it's such a multifaceted thing, but that is what witches are. You know, it's a spiritual practice, and it's also an identity that is grounded in, you know, fighting for equality.
Absolutely. And yeah, like we said before with the witch trials, you know, the many ways in which a woman could be accused, it's, you know, that just shows this like patriarchal kind of like power structure that was trying to take to keep women in their place or to control them. Like I learned too in Scotland that, you know, if you were a woman who was a property owner, you could be accused of witchcraft if somebody wanted that. So I think there's a lot of a connection, there's a connection there between witchcraft and feminism and kind of rejecting these outdated power structures that are in place to keep, you know, women as well as like you know, like queer people. We can think of, you know, other races. Like there's lots of power structures that are in place to keep a certain group of people down. And I think that you know, identifying as a witch, I really try to have that perspective in my practice and try and, you know, work to dismantle that in every conversation that I have and every day that I practice witchcraft, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I think that's something that that drives a lot of us, especially, you know, the documentary focuses on people from the millennial generation. And at a different point in the film, you were exploring covens, you know, modern covens of witches and working with a coven. And there was this moment, it made me laugh. There was this moment where you meet a high priestess in a like a traditional Wiccan coven, and she says that, you know, Wicca and the coven system, it's not a democracy. You know, it's a benevolent dictatorship, I think she said. And I instantly, like, I felt kind of bad after, but I instantly felt myself recoil. I was like, whoa. I think as millennials, we have this little bit of defiance, this idea that, like, actually I can do whatever I want. Like, it's not in a bad way, more in a, no, I'm actually going to decide what's right for me. And although that was very cool, you know, seeing a traditional Wiccan coven in action is still a very, very cool, very, very interesting thing. But I noticed that you also, you know, near the end, were like, I think I want to be involved with a coven that the focus is more on equality and on, you know, everyone bringing their own thing to the table. Has that changed at all your vision of working with other people as a witch? Like, are you still interested in reaching out to other modern practicing witches? You know, possibly starting your own coven, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I feel like that experience was so important to me, meeting Anne Marie and her allowing me to participate in that ritual and to see her coven and to meet everyone. And I think like that it's important we have to know, you know, what historically has is there and what has created this foundation for witchcraft, more specifically Wicca for in their case. And I think it's important to understand and appreciate that. But then also what I love about witchcraft as a whole is that that is a way that speaks to some people, and that's perfectly amazing. And then there's areas where people can explore that and embrace that kind of style of witchcraft. But then I also met, you know, Monica Badowski, who does her own kind of way of, and she runs a coven as well, which is a bit more open and not as, I think the power structures aren't as strongly in place or traditional as maybe Anne Marie had done. But I think I was so thankful to see that path, but then also to meet people who perhaps maybe were more on my page for how I wanted to develop my practice. So I think it was intimidating. She's an incredibly powerful person and a big personality, but I felt like it was important for me to see that side so then I can know not only what I want, but what maybe what doesn't connect with me as much. So it really did
Absolutely.
help inform and shape my practice now too. So, but yeah, I definitely feel like there
Absolutely.
was like some, yeah, the benevolent, what did she call it?
I think she said the
Dictatorship. Yeah, I was
benevolent
just like,
dictatorship.
oh,
Yeah.
yeah, I was like, oh. And then I think she also she had some great direct questions. I think she was like, have you ever done drugs? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm like, my mom's gonna watch
Do this,
this.
yeah.
Yeah. So I think I had a pretty lame answer for that one, but you know, I thought it was great. I was like, yeah, okay, put me through it. I want to experience it. I want to know what works for me and what doesn't. And I think for me, the only way I could have known that for sure is to have had that experience.
Absolutely. And you know that the coven, the whole coven idea is it's become a little bit rare, I think, in our generation. You know, when I was younger and I was studying Wicca specifically, you know, you read so much about covens, and again, Anne Marie's ritual, again, it was taken right out of those books. I'm like, this is so cool. This is exactly how I pictured that, you know, when I read that. It's so amazing to see that there are people who are really practicing this. You know, it makes it very real. And we don't get to see that often. I think a lot of people are looking for that connection with other witches. You know, they're looking for their coven, and it's become difficult to find. So I think it was important that the film showed that, that showed there are still covens. There are traditional covens, if that's what you're into. There are different kinds. You know, this is an art form that you can work with still as a modern witch.
Yeah, and just also too, because at the end of the film, I do talk about how, you know, I would like to have a coven, like a group of people, but I think I say that I would like it to be like a queer coven, and I think that's really important to me and something that I still really want to develop, but I'm kind of a socially anxious person, so it's hard for me to put myself out there, but the documentaries really helped with that. And actually, since the documentary, I've really connected to one friend who, you know, them and myself had never really talked about witchcraft or our specific practices. But because of the documentary, we started talking. And so since then, we've met and we've definitely kind of done some ritual work together. And it's felt really, really nice. So, you know, right now it's just, we're just two. But, you know, I feel like I'd definitely be open to growing that more. And, but I would want it to be, like I say, to kind of, you know, I want everyone to bring their own expertise into it and for it to be equal and just kind of all, you know, learning from each other, I think is what I would really like for that kind of coven.
Absolutely. That's certainly my philosophy with witchcraft, and I think that was I think that's something that makes the movie so good, is that all three of you who were, you know, the main focus, you're all very different. You have different practices, you come from different places, you have different ancestry, different backgrounds, and to see you know, three different people of similar age group from a similar place that can all go in different directions that are unified by magic, I think is really beautiful. It's really important. I think seeing how other people connect with magic is one of the most inspiring things for me. That inspires me in my practice all the time.
Oh yes, I completely agree. And I feel like, you know, through the documentary meeting Andra and just learning from her as well has just been so wonderful. And she's just, yeah, we really connected on the documentary.
It's
And then
so cool.
Leilani Witch Prophet as well. She's incredibly talented and just so much of her like music is just so connected and just so beautiful. I mean, both of them. So it's, yeah, it's great to see, you know, how the witchcraft and their own personal practice inform the art that they create as well.
Yeah, I was not surprised to see that you're all fairly creative people, because I've always felt that creative energy and magical energy, even if they're not the exact same thing, they certainly come from the same kind of place, this instinct to create, to kind of mold ourselves and the world into something that we think is beautiful and is good for other people.
Oh, absolutely.
During the scene with Anne Marie and with her coven, there was this really interesting part where she asked you, what does the goddess stand for? And your answer was community. And when she asked you what it is that you stand for, we never got to see the answer. Do you feel now, after this experience, that you have an answer? What is it that you stand for?
That is a wonderful, wonderfully difficult question. Thank you for asking it. I think, in that moment, I don't know if I had a fully understood or developed answer for myself as a witch, or even myself as a person existing. And I think it's taken a few years since then, and I think, I could say things that I stand for, but I don't still feel like I have a fully realized idea of what that is, that I could say this is it and this is it, forever. I think I'm still learning and evolving, and I think I'm still in the discovery phase, I think. And but the documentary really helped kind of push
Yeah.
that part forward.
I think that's a good thing, though. I think that's something great about witchcraft is that it really encourages you to grow and to explore and to change if that's what you need to do. So I think to say that, what you stand for is going to continue to evolve, throughout your life, I think that's the perfect answer. The perfect answer. That was a really powerful moment because I stopped for a second and I was like, what would I say to that question? There's so many like little individual words that come to mind, but none of them feel more right or wrong than any of the others. Like it
It's
was a very deep
multifaceted.
question.
It's multifaceted, and it's ever evolving. And there's certain things that we our beliefs are there, and I think they inform what we stand for, but I think it's always being open to new information and new ways of thinking, and to be flexible, I think, in that understanding helps us be a bit more connected to the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's say there was going to be, a second part to this documentary. What would be next? Like, where would you want to explore next? It doesn't have to be like a part of the world specifically, but what questions do you still have about the past or about your own connection to magic and witchcraft that you would like to explore in the future?
That is a great question. I feel like if there was a Coven part two, what would I want to explore more? I think I would want to, really start to try and connect with like a larger group of people who are my age, who are practicing in the way that I am, and have maybe more of a regular meetup where I could learn from them. We could share with each other, like have that. I think that would be the next step for me, would be to start to build that community where I actually feel like a part of and feel safe and comfortable around. Because I think, it the documentary opened that conversation for me to have with other people, but I think I still there's parts and part of me that is still a bit holding myself back. I've only done solitary practice for my whole life. It's what I know, it's what I feel safe with. But I think if there could be a part two, it would be exploring and letting go of maybe some of that fear and just being like, you know what, here we go. Like now let's get this planned and together, and start to work towards having that coven. I think would be the next step that I would like to have more confidence in doing, I think.
And I think that's very relatable. I think, I've been a witch a long time and I still feel like that all the time. I still wonder, like, am I really a witch though? Do I really have the right to call myself this? Am I like these other witches that I see. And especially with, you know, popular witchcraft, there's lots of really cool, really, really cool modern witches out there. But, you know, the vast majority are American. And I'm like, am I really cool as these people? And like, no one else. There's not very much in Canada, right?
I know. So
I think it's a very relatable, very kind of universal experience for modern witches to wonder if that's really, is this really real? Is this really, is this really it?
Exactly. And even just like hearing you say that, because like I said, as somebody who had listened to your podcast for years ago, I was like, okay, here's Paige, like knows exactly what she's talking about. She's got this podcast and like, it's probably super confident in all of that. And even talking to Andra too, she heard I related to this kind of imposter syndrome that I think a lot of us have. And I think that is, you know, it's comforting to not comforting, but like, it's nice to know that other folks are feeling the same way. Even if we think, oh no, they know exactly what they're doing. They've got it all figured out. You know, it's like, no, we're all learning and we're all trying to navigate it as best as we can.
Absolutely. And when I was talking to Andra yesterday, she said pretty much the exact same thing. You know, it's when I was watching the film, I was like, wow, this girl's like a real witch, you know, like she is witch through and through. She's so serene. Yeah. She seems so confident. She seems so, and when we were talking, she said basically the same thing. And I definitely had this, like, this little moment of like warmth in my heart. Like, oh my God, it's not just me. It's not just me. Even, you know, someone where I'm looking at like, oh my God, you're so real. You know, they feel the same thing, and it is a little bit comforting. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate it.
Awesome. The film is so exciting. I'm so excited for other people to see it. I can't wait until it's available in the U.S. too. Like I said, I have a lot of American listeners, so you know, for American listeners, aha, we finally got something of our own first.
I know.
We I get
hope
it
that
first.
It is. Yes. I hope that it
I
does
hope so
get,
too.
Because I know that it, so the documentary will come out on Sunday on CBC, as well as the documentary channel. And then it will be available on the CBC Gems, which is like their streaming platform right after. So I'm hoping that they'll make it available in the States as well for any folks there that are interested in seeing, you know, how us Canadian witches are figuring it out.
I'm so grateful that Laura had the time to talk to me. This was such a great conversation. I really felt like I related to her a lot, both in our conversation and when I was watching the film. You know, when I was watching it, I kept thinking, wow, Laura is, she is so much like me. You know, I felt like we explored witchcraft in kind of the same, maybe not in the exact same way, but at the same path. You know, I feel like we took the same kind of road to find our own still very unique ways of practicing. So I'm super glad she had time to talk to me. Apparently, she's been a listener of the show since the earlier days. So since like one of my first episodes, which I will admit left me hilariously starstruck. I'm a little embarrassed about it, but not so much that I won't tell you all. So this was really, really pretty special. Like I said, I'm super excited to have had the chance for this interview and for all of you to check out the movie. You can find out more about it at covendoc.com. I highly recommend, even if you're not in Canada, go to the website, check it out, and learn a little bit more about the journey that these witches went on. Now, if you want to hear more from Laura, or if maybe she seems familiar to you, she hosts a series through Rumorgue on YouTube called Terror Tarot, where she looks at how tarot cards feature in different horror movies like Dead Alive and The People Under the Stairs. She talks about Zahnar cards in The Gift by Sam Raimi, who I gushed about in my Halloween episode last year because he's kind of a local boy. And of course, one of my favorite examples, one of my favorite movies, and one of my favorite examples of tarot in film, which is The Love Witch by Anna Biller. Super entertaining. And I love seeing the different ways tarot cards are used and even misused in the creation of art. You know, some of my favorite horror movies are actually super, super cheesy. So, so it's a really fun series. I highly recommend it. You can also find her every other Thursday at Stormcrow Manor in Toronto for Tarot Thursdays. You can pop in, get a short reading, and then enjoy the really cool atmosphere. It's very inclusive, it's very queer friendly, and you have just a really good witchy time. And I will, of course, put links in the description to both of those things so you can explore them on your own. Thank you for tuning in to this week's Fat Feminist Witch double feature. I'm so excited. So there are two episodes that are out right now. So if you haven't yet, check out my other interview with Andra, also from Coven. And if you are in Coven, of course, head over to the CBC Gem app and watch the film for yourself. You absolutely will not be disappointed. If you want to learn more about me, the podcast, or any of my books, visit thefatfeministwitch.ca. You can also find the link on there to my merch store through TeePublic, which offers tote bags, stickers, and of course, t-shirts and hoodies, featuring the show logos and other bits of witchy art that I've created over the years. T-shirts go up to sizes 5X. They're available in a whole range of colors, and I can tell you from personal experience that they are very soft and very comfortable. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where I'm able to be, just a little bit more interactive with you. So I hope you all find me there. If you want to support the show, get access to some exclusive content and a monthly magical newsletter, you can do that at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. I truly could not do the show without the support of these patrons, and I'm forever, forever grateful for everything that they do for me.